and then become the best in elevate. Oh yeah. Rising above, reaching for the sky.
Welcome back, my friends, to the Sweet Spot, where IT leaders share the insight with other leaders and others that want to lead. So every week, I have my two co-hosts, Howard Holton and Paul Lewis.
Hello, hello.
Wait. You guys have a different setup today. And did you just trip a light or something?
He just fell behind the couch. That's going to cause a problem for me after recording.
Does he look much darker than he did seconds ago?
Where are you guys this week?
We are in
London,
Las Vegas.
Ontario. Las Vegas.
Las Vegas, Nevada, in the currently sitting in the pyramid, the Luxor Casino.
Fancy.
Which explains why my head is buried in the curtains.
Is that a Marriott property now?
So it is a Marriott code share.
Yes.
Not actually a property. Okay. So MGM and Marriott have decided to do some code sharing.
It's the MGM collection under Marriott Bonvoy.
Yeah, last time I was in Vegas, they didn't have that yet. So you're enjoying the first fruits of that membership.
But you have to book directly. If you were to book the conference rate, which I did, then you don't get the elite privileges, but you don't get the collection.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah. It's not a qualifying rate as per their terms of service.
Yes. But if you book on the app or if you book through MGM, you get the dollars and the nights.
Correct. Yes.
Which I found out because for Black Hat this year, I wanted a specific room that was only available on the website. So I called Bonvoy and the guy's like, yeah, just book it on the MGM website. Why are you calling me?
You require presidential suites? Is that what you have a certain minimum standard?
I need a suite so that we can set up this recording setup. So... this is the new, my new recording setup. I have a 3-camera. Here's Howard. Here's Paul. Here's both. And lighting and all that. And, you know, it's a little awkward to only have a bed and have people sit on the edge of the bed. It feels a little too, like, casting couch.
Just trust. I'm just going to leave you.
Oh.
That's more of that.
We've been here for a week. Well, I've been here since Sunday. When did you get?
Tuesday.
Tuesday. We're here for the Google Next 2024. We're learning everything. Google Cloud.
Yeah. What is new? I saw a couple of updates, but I think that what is new from Google?
I think we should play a game.
Okay. Right?
I think we should say what is new.
Buzzword bingo?
Pause and let everybody like comment what they think is the new thing. We'll wait 10 seconds, right, and then we'll tell them what the answer is. Right? What do you think, Carlos?
That might be a good thing. Like, is there something new on AI?
Well, you just ruined it. AI is the new thing.
That's right.
There is.
Oh, I thought that.
All about AI, buddy.
All about AI, but distinctly different than last. Next.
I mean.
Okay. Really?
I it's a little more pointed.
Yeah.
Right? Like last year was all about whatever Gemini was called, Bard? What the hell was it called before it was Gemini?
Well, the
Palm
didn't have a unifying name, right? So there was Do It AI, there was Bard, there was Gemini, sure, the model, there was GCP AI assistance, right? They all had different series.
Did Gemini exist last year?
Gemini the model did.
Sure. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But I didn't think it was released.
They released Gemini 1.5 Pro at the show this week.
Right.
Yeah, the multi-modal.
And renamed everything else.
Yeah, everything else is now the Gemini brand series. So it's Gemini for developers, Gemini for code assist, Gemini the model, Gemini the search, Gemini for workspace. It's all series of Gemini technologies.
So right. Wait, did they just change a name? Because last year's was Duet. So this year's Gemini?
Gemini for Workspace is the new name for that series of features. I think top down, last year, generative AI they used constantly was more about an application. build your generative AI thing to chat with your data, to interact differently with your customer. And this year, it's much more about, no, applications wasn't really what we meant. What we really meant was feature. And we're going to talk about generative AI features within the things that you already use. Some of them might be the features within a workspace. Some of them might be features within the IDE. Some of them might be features in your search function. You're going to acquire them via marketplace. You're going to have embedded in your applications. But we're talking about agents slash features. And that's the go-to-market versus you building a Gen AI practice. They're saying you should build Gen AI skill set within your existing practice. That's kind of that's the nuance between August and April.
Okay. I'm not sure I disagree with the message,
yeah,
but every single time you said Gemini, all I heard was painful costs are coming.
Yes. That is going to be an expensive adventure.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And thematically, that can't be the answer. Right. The answer can't be, in order to stay competitive in workspace, the cost of workspace is now doubled.
It's going to be an add-on $10 per user per month.
So doubled.
It's going to be the huge. And for a company of 100, not a lot of real money. Company of 40,000, a lot of real money.
But even then, a company of 100, $10 a month is $120 a year, so that's $12,000 a year.
Right.
That's a lot of money for a small company.
That's true.
Right. Like that's
as
the
a percentage.
Problem. Right. That's the problem with this linear stuff. Right. So at $120,000 of a 100-person company, you're costing me two people.
Yeah.
What are they offering for that, Paul or Howard? Are there actually, like last year, that you needed a license per different product, or that will be for every product that they own? So if you have Google, Gmail, Workspace.
It's not an umbrella Gemini price. That was a Workspace price. Gemini Code Assistance is a different set of prices. Gemini, the model, you'd pay a consumption price as you would
sure,
any model.
API, right? Sure.
Vertex AI, I believe, is the development model to which you don't pay for. However, you now need to deploy that in a GCP environment, and therefore you pay for that execution. Right. Search, I assume, is free as it normally would be.
Sure. So the least valuable piece remains free.
Right.
Everything else eats away at your bottom line in a significant way.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. Right. Just checking.
Yeah. Which is why they did showcase a lot of interesting use cases on the main stage, they were still pretty nascent, right? They weren't saying go all in, replace all your technologies with these technologies, right? They were cautious in terms of the crawl, walk, run, do some piloting, do some internal use cases, see if that works, and then worry about your external use cases. But then I went to a few sessions that were very, very advanced, like AI ops and ML ops and LMM ops, which is a set of features and technologies and tool sets that is well beyond most IT shops at the moment. I don't think they can handle it unless you're a bank, a big retail, a telco,
company. Sure. Like if you're looking on a scale of 1 to 5 maturity to add ops, you kind of already have to be at a 3.5.
Right. You have to already require something called ops.
Right. And you're most organizations that we've encountered sit between like 1.6 and 2.2.
Right.
In reality.
Right.
They're not very mature. They're not very advanced. They're not pushing at the limits of what the organization will allow. The organization is dragging them, not the other way around.
Yeah. They have a half dozen use cases, not hundreds of use cases.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And therefore they don't have model change on a monthly basis and require the change management, release management, one would require a new LLM model.
Right.
They're not retraining constantly with their new data. But new words are coming, right? So RAG, new word. Grounding, new word, right? There's new, hey, I have to, now that I'm thinking about real world implementations, now I'm understanding the negative impact of hallucination, right? I'm understanding the negative impact of bad answers. And therefore, we're now going to create technologies and features in this tool set for you to deal with grounding the data with your own nomenclature or to reevaluate the output of the LLM with something more relatable to the use case.
Which helps reduce-ish hallucinations.
Right.
Does not remotely eliminate hallucinations. These are not one-stop shops to solve hallucinations. They are ways to increase the data set in a very specific way to make sure that it doesn't hallucinate when you ask it a question about your own business.
Right.
Right. You ask it a question that is within the bounds of what your company is aware of, but outside the bounds of what the LLM is aware of.
Right.
Right. So distinctly different than eliminating hallucinations, but adding context that didn't previously exist.
That's right.
Right. You still have to manage your offboarding in a very significant way, right, to make sure that the LLM isn't like when it can't find something, it's not a pure language model, but rather has an exit path available to it that's not available in the default model.
You still need pre-processing and post-processing. You still need a means to dissect the question and a means to put constraints around the answer.
For sure. Right? Onboarding and offboarding.
So exactly. So, you know, I've seen, you know, the one I use most frequently is the weather network app, right? In the weather network app, they have this new function and, you know, ask a question, and it in many ways has no boundaries. It gives you example prompts. Hey, what's the weather? Or should I wear a raincoat in New York next week? Which you could type that, or you could type in anything you feel. Like, sure. You could say, hey, what's the definition of a word? And it'll tell you the definition of a word. Or you can say, answer this question in the voice of Hulk Hogan. It will answer that. Like, there's no actual boundaries there. And I think that's going to burn them at some point when people ask inappropriate questions and then take screenshots and then tweet those out. Like, there might be a brand.
I'm surprised it's not already happening.
Right. They might have put some basic stuff constraints on either side, but you never know.
Well, but that's where jailbreaking, the concept of jailbreaking comes in, yeah. Right? Where people work to find out how to get the LLM to work outside the parameters that it's given, because the parameters that it's given only deal with the first layer problems.
Right.
Right. Like, I've seen some amazing jailbreaks lately, and really only the big guys are working to resolve those jailbreaks. Right. So when you then use that in your own model, you also have to work to close those jailbreaks, and the big guys aren't publishing how they're closing the jailbreaks.
Right. And there's a little bit of smoke and mirrors. So I made this observation.
Never.
I made this observation on the show floor to a few colleagues, because we were talking about sort of the amazing demonstrations we were looking at. And we saw some interesting demonstrations on Workspace. You know, there's new features, like it's auto translates and auto creates meeting notes for Meet. It has a sidebar, right? So you don't have to click on the thing. You can sidebar while you're in Slides, let's say.
Like all the stuff that Zoom does,
yeah,
in meetings.
Yeah.
For free, but, by the way, for free, no additional charge.
Correct. So there's that. And then Vertex AI is, you know, relatively complex IDE, which is helpful. Code Assist, Gemini for developers, actually is very well done. If there's any aspect of Gemini implementation, it is the Code Assist part of it. And sure, other parts of this. What my observation was, they were showing a lot of demos that required a lot of prompts. None of them were typing in the prompts.
Right.
All of them were grabbing from the clipboard. Now, premise-wise, it's because they didn't want to waste time for 30,000 people,
sure,
to type. The reality is, I wonder how long it took them to figure out what prompts were going to work.
Right.
Right.
How much prompt engineering was required to get to that prompt that provided,
right,
that output with that level of consistency.
Exactly.
To make it work.
They're,
right,
showcasing the last one.
Right.
But it could have been,
correct,
80 hours of figuring,
correct,
out what prompt actually would have been effective. Right. Which is kind of, that's smoke and mirrors, right? To say, am I random developer or random business user supposed to have known what the appropriate question should have been? Probably not. Right?
Well,
sometimes they're chaining these
things.
I think
the answer is yes, you are supposed to know what it is if you want it to work, because it's not prepared to work,
right,
when you don't know the answer.
But what does trial and error look like? Like,
right,
I'm trying to imagine the real world where I'm just fresh into it. Am I asking 15, 20, 30 prompts before I'm getting it to do the thing I actually intended to do? And at that point, have I wasted the time?
But
couldn't I have just gone some other place and just go?
Sure,
to
but it's also not one prompt, right?
Yeah.
So how do I know that I asked the right prompt at each level?
Right.
because maybe I know when I get to the end, oh, that didn't work. Oh, that didn't work. Oh, that didn't work. Oh, that didn't work.
Right.
How do I know it's not because the second prompt is actually the problem and it's not the current prompt I'm working
right
with? Like that's a big part of prompt engineering. That's a problem. And that's where I see a lot of this stuff. Like it's got a cascade effect to it. Mm-hmm. And there really isn't a good way to manage that. And there isn't really a good way to know that.
Right.
So did they include anything that will automatically do that back and forth? Like I use GPT Pilot and it actually does that. You start the question and it start going back and forth with its internal, like similar agents. Like, oh, the architect is reviewing what you're talking about, is talking to the developer agent, and then it bring the questions back and forth and it's reviewing that. Did they show anything like that in the code assist that it will go back and forth automatically?
No.
Okay. No. Again, though, it doesn't mean that it's not doing that. That's just a question of what does, like, how do the designers build the review process? Because the review process, the internal kind of back and forth that it does, can be totally hidden from the users. It's just a question of what you want to expose. There's also the question of, is it actually doing that, or is it just generating imagery?
Yeah,
that'll be the interesting thing.
Have to look at all like what's displayed on screen.
Yeah, when I go, it actually show you the code and the prompt that it's asking. So, if you say I want to build a login screen for my app, then the architect come and rewrite it as the specification how the developer should review it, and then you see the developer. The prompt the developer sent to the AI to start looking at everything. So that was a back and forth that I was looking for, because it will be interesting that if you can do that at least within the GCP ecosystem, then you can say, well, at least this will help me build within that ecosystem or to transfer stuff into the ecosystem without having the knowledge of it.
The development demonstration in the keynote, the developer keynote, was compelling, right? It was business problem is I have an existing website. I want to change the homepage to showcase something else. I have a bunch of wireframes, an example of that I had a designer to do. As a developer, I could go into the prompt and say, here's the requirements as I best remember them. I'm going to upload, because it's multimodal, the pictures from the sample, the wireframes, generate code. And yes, it effectively generated code from those things. And you could apply that code directly to your application.
Do you wonder if we like went too far? Right? Like is that really, is the business user being able to describe a business problem and a desire that they want and then get code back? Did we go too far? Like, I'm sitting here thinking the thing that I actually would have liked as the stage we're at today is like a chat function between the business user and the technologist to translate between the two.
Right.
Because that's actually where I have the problem in the business. I don't really have a problem of code generation in the business. What I have a problem is understanding what the desire of the customer is and translating that into some sort of technology requirement.
That's an interesting observation.
Right? So like what I really want is, I don't like the color of the web page. Can you change the color of the web page? Okay, that one's pretty simple.
Right.
Right? But something along the lines of, it doesn't work.
Right.
But it's broken. And have it come back with prompts that get you to a point where you can like route it to the right place, send it to the right team.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like auto triage.
IVR.
Right, and then it goes to the developer. It goes to the developer that goes, okay, so the error message, blah 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 blah. Okay, so we've restarted 17 services in the following way. It updates a ticket and then responds back and says this should be fixed. There was a problem in a system that you can't see. Can you try it again and confirm that it works?
Right.
Like it's like that's actually what I want. Right. I want the ability to capture what the need is of the business and translate that into technical requirements in a way that allows like both people to reflect on it and then translate back and forth.
Yeah.
Right. So we're going to change the website. We're going to change the color of this element. The color of this element needs to match this color. And then it shows a swatch of the color, right? Which means your palette now changes to this. It's unlikely the developer is going to know all these things.
Right.
right? And then the end user can go, ooh, that color actually doesn't fit the palette. Like can you suggest a color that's closer to the palette? You know what I mean?
It's almost design engagement versus code creation.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see why how that would be helpful, but that's not what the implementation looks like.
No, not at all. Yeah. But that's what I mean. Like, that's why I asked the question. Did we go too far? Right? Did everybody, because we're all technologists, everybody involved in the creation of this is technologists, and so they thought about it from their perspective. But is that really the right perspective?
Yeah, it's a good point. Instead of chat with your data or chat with your code, it should be chat with your colleague.
Right. Chat with the colleague that doesn't understand you, and vice versa.
Right. Interpret what each other is saying to avoid the natural frustration of these two groups.
Yeah. Right.
We need Google Translate for business.
Correct. Right. Google Translate for business. Yeah.
Yeah. But for different parts. So imagine if we're talking about the website, it would be business analyst to developer. But if it was a Looker Tableau outcome, it would be the BI team.
Sure. But it could also be finance. Right. Finance is asking for a burn down chart. Do you know what a burn down chart is? No, you have no idea what a burn down chart is. Right. And it'd be really easy for the LLM to recognize terms that belong to the department.
Right.
Like you could have a profile that shows the department for each team and then have it highlight the term, and you could click on the term and the GPT would give you the ELI-5 for the term.
Yeah.
I think we just created a company.
I also think if I were to look top down again, they're preaching to the choir. Like I'm in the developer keynote and they'll say, how many people have fine-tuned their own LLM, and 80% of the audience was like, really? Do you think 80% of technologists have fine-tuned an LLM in the real world versus attending
also,
the Google?
Let's be honest. Do you think 80% of the audience really fine-tuned an LLM?
Also a good point.
No.
But
I think 80% of the audience has no idea what fine-tuning an LLM means. Right. And 80% of the audience did some jailbreaking. 80% of the audience added some data.
Right.
I don't think 80% of that audience actually fine-tune an LLM.
Right. And the last thing's like grounding and
RAG. I'll also be honest. If you already fine-tuned an LLM, you read the doc before the keynote and don't need to be in the keynote.
Right. You already have that knowledge base.
Correct. Yeah. What are you doing in the keynote if you've already fine-tuned an LLM? Like you're so much more advanced than anything revealed in a keynote. And everybody I know that's actually that advanced is really dismissive of keynotes because they're so high level.
And I gotta understand why it's understandably frustrating, right? The only examples you're seeing of people who are far more advanced in the field.
Right.
There's nothing reflective of where I am in my expertise, I am in my skill set of my team, I am in the budget to which I have to deliver on this thing. Like, nobody's helping me with the start. They're telling me what it looks like 5 years from now.
For sure.
In fact, a good portion of the stories were, we started this process 5 years ago, and we were one of the founding members of the
blah, blah, blah foundation.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm sure that was amazing. But how about me? Right? I have 8 people in my IT shop. I'm trying to create some wizardry too.
Right. There's no conferences for that. Right. Like, there used to be a conference that you and I very much like to go to. We still go to it.
Yeah.
But it used to be focused on executive leaders only, and now it's anybody in IT.
Right.
Right. And I feel like it's diluted that message because that really used to be about this should be on your strategy. This is why this is important. And it felt like because it was so focused on leaders, it was really focused on like the broad foundational things and then built on those broad foundational things.
Yeah.
Now it's become just another let's repeat the same thing that's at every other conference and hope that you hear it again, I guess. Right. Like last year was all Gen AI. The year before that was all Meta.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like there really is nothing where you can take someone that is, again, at that kind of maturity 1.6 to 2.2 and go, let's get you to 2.5.
Right.
Right. Let's prepare you for the threes.
Right.
Which you're not at today. Right. It's either useless regurgitation of stuff that you end up seeing on the news anyways.
Right.
Or hyper focused on those that are maturity 4 and better.
Yeah. Hyper advanced functions.
Right.
And you walk away disappointed. You walk away thinking, I'm not prepared. I can't do this work.
Walk away disillusioned.
Yeah.
Right? You don't walk away disappointed. You walk away disillusioned. You walk away in a position of fear. You walk away going, well, this is hope that I'll never catch up.
Right.
And the fact is, you just spent a week in a microcosm of people that are very advanced.
That's right.
Right? Of
people who aren't.
Who aren't, but don't know it because everyone on stage is hyper advanced.
Right?
It's like... it's bizarre to me that these conferences also do nothing at the 101 and 201 level.
Right.
Let's show you what people far advanced than the audience are doing.
Right.
Cool. How do I get there? Oh, they don't have a clue because they've been advanced for so long.
Right.
There's no way for them to know how to get there today.
They can't get back.
Well, then they started 5 years ago.
Right.
And the maturity of the market has changed. The maturity of the tools have changed. The availability of everything has changed.
Right.
They wouldn't know how to start today.
Right.
Because they didn't use any of those things.
That's right.
They weren't that mature. They, you know what I mean? They built it to themselves as they went along. And you don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah. They had early versions of the tools we're talking about now, which clearly are representative of what you have
right
in front of you. And so, while that is amazing for the maturity of technology, it's not helpful for anybody who's starting out right now.
Did they share anything for, like you said, if a company wanted to start leveraging the tools, but they have no clue, was there anything that will guide them to how to start or how to start leveraging, or let's say a partner that have some skills, where do they go to help their customers? Was there any of that?
They focus heavily on, and this isn't Google, but it's all big vendors, on credentialing. Right. Here's your certification program. Here's your learning path, and anybody can be a Vertex AI architect, right?
Yeah.
But that's a lot of pre-work in order to do, simple learning and application in your world.
Well, it's a lot of pre-work to figure out if you can get there from here.
Right.
Right. More importantly,
right.
And it's a lot of either after hours ask of your whole team,
right?
Because you can't. It's the other part is as you embark on this journey, you can't be a partial team. You can't have one developer that uses AI,
right?
Right. You got to get your whole team moved over to this,
right?
It's why Workspaces and O365. If you want the AI model, it's the whole thing,
right?
Right. You don't take part of the company. That's a ridiculous thing to do,
right?
There's a lot of discussion about how that's going to create an us versus them kind of focus and look, right? Those that have AI enabled in their day-to-day business and those who do not is going to create almost class warfare.
Right.
Right. And so you really don't want to do things like that. I could see like if you're an enterprise and you're looking at, well, we can't roll this out to 40,000 people. I could see using it for diversity, inclusion, programs, right? Where one of the best use cases I've ever seen, I love the use case, is there's a guy with severe dyslexia who had trouble, like no problem in a room when he's talking, horrible trouble because of his disability, trying to write follow-up emails.
Right.
So I could see enabling people with disabilities and using that to, because that's already kind of a class differentiation,
right?
Using that to kind of level the playing field.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, the AI is so good, they will leapfrog.
Right.
So it's really, really important as you go through this to recognize you're going to create class warfare if you only partially roll out these capabilities to some of your people. And that also means the training. So how do I take my whole team and go, all of you now have to get the certification to figure out how we're going to use this?
I'd be concerned with your example that's helping the communication, but that's not helping the person. Is it? It's going to redraft. It's going to update the text.
Sure, but
is that a learning experience or is that a frustration experience?
Well,
okay, like you say, 90% of the time, it's rewriting my content because it's trying to be helpful. Is that not a negative psyche effect?
For sure, it's not. Well, it's not teaching me how to write better.
Right.
Right. At the same time, I think ideally you have to do both. Right. Ideally, you have to provide some feedback loop that is like a training assistant. Again, great use for AI.
Right.
These are the changes I would suggest. This is why I would suggest those changes. In the future, you might consider doing the following.
Right.
Right. But that's not what it does. In the same way that I think we've leapfrogged with the developer experience, right? We come right back to the same discussion.
Right.
These things are such good tutors, right? Instead of embedding the fix, embedding the education would be my preference. But that's not what we're doing with the tools.
No.
Right?
We're embedding the fix, yeah.
which actually brings us closer to idiocracy that no one knows is idiocracy.
Right.
Right? We're the Mike Judge movie from 2000, for those who don't know, Idiocracy. I highly recommend watching it. Effectively, as we continue to automate and as we continue to deprioritize education, right, the average IQ falls to somewhere around the 60s or 50s or 40s.
Right.
And so the current uses of AI aren't focusing on making you better. They're focusing on making your output better without improving you in any way.
Right.
Right. That's not really where we should be headed. Right? My use of AI tends to be teach me something, learn something, make me better.
Right.
Right. Sure. I want to also make me more efficient. Right. But efficiency isn't what I'm like, isn't the same as replacing my output with better output.
Yes.
Right. Makes more output. Sure. Right. Less effort to get the same output I would have created. Sure.
Right? And we're not the average consumers. So when I look at the.
No, but I think that's also part of the problem.
Yeah.
Right? The people that are building these things are already hyper intelligent.
Yeah.
And so they're building them to make themselves more efficient. They're building them to make themselves faster.
Right.
What they don't know, because they don't care. They don't know they should care.
Right.
Is they're failing to recognize that in doing so, they're undoing the very things that if you ask them the right question, they would say they wish didn't happen.
Yeah.
If I ask any developer, right, do you wish the public education system was better and people got a better education? They would all say, absolutely. Right. I would love if that happened.
Right.
And yet the software that they're designing is making the problem worse, not better.
Yeah. Or you're using a much more complex tool than you need. So contact center AI is a great example, right? Where from the vendor's perspective, you wouldn't think that this reality exists. There's a finite number of questions a consumer will ask about this product. The technology assumes there's an infinite amount of questions, right? But I guarantee you, there's only a couple hundred possible ways you could ask the same set of questions about this one product you're selling. So they moved away from a tree approach, right? Here's the questions to ask me the answer to, ask anything, and I will try to surmise what I think the question is in order to give you a generative answer. That seems like a lot of technology to handle the 100 things they could possibly
But it's
ask
also
for.
It's also the wrong way to go about it. The right way to go about it is to combine the two.
Right.
Right. Because what I really want to do with the Gen AI is not replace the tree, but the tree is hyper specific, right? As in, one of the things that I think about is resumes,
right?
I want to know, do you understand transport protocols?
Right.
So if I look for transport protocols on your resume, you're not likely to have that.
Right.
But you might have BGP, IPv4, IPv6, right? TCP/IP, like a bunch of terms
that allow me to related to it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So what I really want is I want the tree,
right?
And then I want Gen AI to sit on top of it and go, like, give me 20% variance left and right.
Right.
Contextually, this is what I'm looking for.
Right.
Does that context contained within the question?
Right.
Gen AI can say yes, the context is contained within that question. Therefore, it's this piece of the tree.
Right.
And yet again, that's not what we did.
Right. And the same with a random business user. I, in IT, in the last 30 years, have spent way more time helping a business user define the question
100%.
Instead of implementing the answer.
100%.
Right? So if we're now abstracting the question part into the prompt engineering, well, this is making it worse, not better.
Correct.
They don't know the question.
Correct.
So to suggest that they should just keep attempting the question.
The question specifically defines the destination.
Right.
And if I don't refine the question, I don't know that I'm going to get to the right destination.
Right.
So if I just take the first question and leap, right, I'm guaranteed to not get to the destination.
Right.
And oftentimes, the destination that the business user thinks they want isn't actually the destination they're trying to get to.
Right.
But they don't understand enough to know how to ask the question. So when it becomes really valuable, it's about refining the question so that everyone goes in the right direction.
That's right.
Right. And if you remove that step,
right.
Right, which is why I think that business translator, that's what I was getting to with the business translator, right?
Like
helping refine all of the things to create the correct set of specifications and outcomes.
Yeah.
then you should, like, I'd love it if you could then click go and have it all created. Sure, but
we need the tell me what you really mean prompt engineer.
The wish engineer.
Yeah, it's like, what is your wish? Asked this thing, but tell me the other dimensions you're actually
right.
Let me re-ask you 15 other things to help you re-articulate the question you're actually asking.
And I'll be honest, my favorite thing to use with GPT is to feed it like my whole thought process and go, what am I missing?
Right.
That's my favorite thing.
Right.
Right. What assumptions have I just made in this decision-making process? Give me all of those.
Right.
And it's really good at that. Like, it's really good at going, you actually missed these four things.
Right.
And sometimes I go, okay, I know those, like, I just have those four things memorized, so I don't consider them each time. Sometimes I go, you're right, I didn't give you two of them because I do have those two memorized, but I actually missed these two.
Right.
Right. And the ability to use it to refine exactly the way that you and I are talking.
Right.
But I have to be an active participant in doing that.
Right.
It's really good at that, which is why I think that'd be a really good application of AI.
And that time-wise, had you just researched and wrote it versus going through the process of asking many questions, many iterations, is it the same or is it longer?
Well, because I'm an active participant, it's extremely fast.
Right.
Right. Like in an hour, I get a framework that I would have had to spend 5 to 10 to find.
Okay.
Because that stuff is also not readily apparent.
Sure.
Right. And so that's the other advantage is I would have to Google search forever to find like 12 sources that gave me a baseline where I can just actually ask ChatGPT and it'll give me the aggregate of those 12 instantly.
But then how do you verify the verifier? Right? How do you take that output and say, give me a second opinion, give me a third opinion, give me a fourth opinion on this thing?
You literally just do that.
Yeah.
Like I still feed it back in.
Right.
Right. I take all of the output, I feed it into a new chat, and then I ask similar questions. But this time I'm asking for like references. How do you know that? Where did you find that information? And then I validate the references.
But then you have to use new models. Like you're just going to put it in a new window, same model. But don't you want to attempt it in another model?
It depends.
Okay.
Like it depends on what my confidence level is and how close it gets to, like I already have a target in mind.
Yeah.
Like I already have a reasonability kind of in my own head. So if it's pretty close to the reasonability that I expect, I'll use the same model. If it's not, or my confidence is low, I'll use a separate model.
Right.
Like I use Claude and ChatGPT are the two models that I use.
Right.
I find Claude much better for long form, GPT much better for research, but that's just my personal opinion. Right.
Right.
But I do recommend for anyone, like at this stage, if you've been messing around with GPT for a while, don't use more than one model when you're getting started. Do not learn what one model is going to give you as an output, get comfort. And then add a second model as you start to advance and flip back and forth and see what the differences are and take the output from one model, and put it in the other model and ask questions and vice versa.
Carlos, we've talked a lot about Gen AI, but other things were announced too, right? So just a quick rundown top of my head as I'm thinking about it. So there were some new infrastructure pieces, new relationship with AMD, so they can create some custom CPUs. Interesting. New TPUs available, a new custom NVIDIA GPU as a custom option. So there's good infrastructure pieces for AI or non-AI workloads. New database AI functions and features to do things like reevaluating SQL code and rewriting it, reprompting it where you need to. Workspace had other additional functions that were now available. New security controls. So they have a variety of security functions. Now it's in a bigger security umbrella. So, you know, there's other pieces of GCP.
Correct.
GWS.
It was a very thorough conference.
Yeah.
I'd love to get into some of those topics on a future podcast episode. What do you think? Especially the custom CPU thing.
Yeah.
I'd love to talk about why that matters, why that's important, why we're seeing more traction in that. I think that'd be a good podcast episode in the future.
Yeah, that would be a good one to go in. I think that then the last question that I have is like, you walk the floor because I know you. Any interesting vendors or ads or anything that was interesting in the floor?
So, Paul works in the space, so he's going to have a little different opinion. Because effectively, when you work in a space, everyone you communicate with is a buyer. And so it feels like it's hotter than I think it actually is.
Yeah, that is so, a fair statement.
Yes. So I'm seeing a lot more like data ops, semantic layer, good, what I would consider good data catalogs on the face than I have in the past. And Google has kind of sucked them to the center as far as placement on the floor. I found that to be really nice, really interesting, really kind of cool, because I think it's a place, like we've talked a lot in the past about data quality, mm-hmm. right? The problem with data quality is it's a freaking elephant. Good semantic layers, good data observability is about applying those same needs, desires, and metrics on top of the data that you're actively using, which is an enormously small subset of your total data, which makes data quality something that is actually like approachable and reasonable and usable. So that's like that's the thing I would say I found the most interesting.
It's an obvious observation of the room. Data governance holistically, from even ETL, either transformation, observability, not just semantic layer, but any data quality and or data assessment type service, background, right? They're in the back shelves. It was much more about tooling. In fact, everything you saw was build application tooling. It was very rare to see worry about information availability, information accessibility, information privacy and security. That was kind of behind the scenes. It was assumed that you have that. The irony, of course, is that it's an incredibly mature environment, which most people haven't implemented.
So outside of this conference, I'm seeing the opposite. I'm seeing AI governance, data governance really have a push because, to your point, right, and to kind of what we talked about before, right, Google Next is about feeding the experts.
Yeah.
The industry is about feeding the industry.
Yeah.
And so I'm seeing a lot more, hey, you failed to do this year over year. It is complicated, sure, but AI means you no longer have a choice.
Right.
If you're not governing the data that goes into AI, if you're not governing the information that comes out of AI, you're hosed.
Yeah.
Like that risk is, I cannot possibly understate that risk. It is so big.
It is such an important set of prerequisites to make any of these things true. And yet I didn't see any of the content.
Right. Right. Well, I hate to say it, Carlos, but I'm certainly out of time.
Well, that was a good summary of everything, and I think that there may be a lot of more. And like you said, Howard, we can do another session at a future time. My friends, if you haven't seen it, there's a lot of content for Next that will be dropped in the next couple of days directly in their channels. So make sure that you subscribe to their channels and look, share, subscribe to our channel, and we'll see you on our next episode.